to court, Richard Andrews for the state of Delaware. May I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes.
This is an appeal by the state from an order of the Superior Court suppressing the evidence that was seized after a vehicle stop based on the ruling that there was no reasonable articulable suspicion to stop the vehicle, notwithstanding that a drug detective had twice, once immediately before the stop, watched two transactions which he believed to be drug deals involving the particular car that was stopped. And he did explain at the suppression hearing why he believed both of the two transactions that he watched were drug deals. This is a fairly fact-specific case. I know the court has read the briefs, but I think it's important to go over what the evidence was. On March 22nd, in response to a complaint from an anonymous resident that there were drug transactions taking place in the 1,000 to 1,100 block of North Pine Street in Wilmington, the detective starts watching surveillance video. And he watches about 6 hours over 2 days. And during that time, he sees two things that he identifies as being drug transactions, both involving one particular car, a Mercury Marquis. On the first day, what he sees in the downtown vision surveillance camera is a fixed location, but the detective can manipulate it so he can focus in on things that he wants to focus in on. On the first day, what he sees is a different car, not the Mercury Marquis that's eventually stopped. A different car drive down Pine Street in the block from 10th Street to 11th Street. And as it's driving down, it stops, and a person gets out of the car, goes over to the side of the street, turns around back in the direction that he came from, and waves. The detective testifies that in his experience, this is a signal that he's waving to someone to bring him some drugs that he can purchase. He gets back in the car, drives to the end of the block, and parks the car. He then gets out of the car, walks back down to the mid-block, approximately where he'd done the signaling from, and that's where the Mercury Marquis comes into view. He gets into the car with whomever is in the Mercury Marquis, and they drive to the end of the street where the person who had driven in the first car gets out of the car, gets back into his car, or say his, could be hers, we really can't tell, but gets back into a He's a man. Gets back into his car, and they both drive off. The detective thought that he had seen a drug deal. He would have tried to stop both cars, but he wasn't able to do it that day. I'm going to go on to the second day in a moment. I do want to just point out that in our brief on page 3, there's an identification of who was in the first car. It says it's the defendant. That's erroneous. We don't know who was in the first car. There was no testimony at the suppression hearing as to who was in either of the two vehicles involved in the transaction on the first day. So the second day, the detective is back. He's watching, and I guess I should just emphasize, the only thing that he's seen that is all noteworthy to him on the 3 hours of watching that he does on the first day is this transaction that I've just described, or incident. On the second day, he sees the Mercury Marquis come into the block again. This time it goes down and parks just short of halfway on the left-hand side. And a person that he knows as Corey Hammond comes over to talk to the car. Now, he's already seen Corey Hammond on surveillance.
He being the officer?
He the officer, yes. He knows Corey Hammond because he's arrested him for a drug offense in the past himself. He knows Corey Hammond is on probation, and he knows Corey Hammond lives at 1010 North Pine Street, which is the specific address, or one of the specific addresses, that was mentioned in the anonymous complaint that got this investigation started. So Mr. Hammond comes over, leans into the passenger side window for less than a minute, and then leans back out and walks away. And the driver of the Mercury Marquis makes an immediate left on the Sherman Street and is promptly pulled over. The Superior Court said there was no...
And why was he pulled over? Why was the vehicle pulled over?
Well, he was pulled over because the detective who was watching, Detective Ballard, asked other detectives, including Detective Hazard, who was presumably on some kind of patrol in the area, who's part of his, Detective Ballard's group, to pull him over and mention that there was window tint on the car, suggesting that he could pull him over for window tint. So that's what he communicated to Detective Hazard. Detective Hazard pulled him over because he was asked to pull him over and because he couldn't see through the window sufficiently to make out exactly who was inside.
Well, is there an objective basis to conclude that there was a window tint violation or not?
Your Honor, yes. The testimony was that that he couldn't make out exactly who was in the car through the window tint, based on, in particular, the Superior Court's opinion in a 2007 case, State versus Trower, the State's position is that it provided reasonable articulable suspicion that there was a window tint violation occurring. So that would be one objective basis. But the State's main position here is that there was reasonable articulable suspicion based on seeing this Mercury Marquis involved in two transactions that a drug detective, based on his experience, identified as being drug sales. Now, the Superior Court seized upon some language from Detective Ballard's testimony, the surveillance detective, to suggest that Detective Ballard didn't believe there was reasonable articulable suspicion. But there's two reasons why this is problematic. Three. One is that it was clearly erroneous because what the Superior Court was quoting was Detective Ballard's testimony about the first of the 2 days, independent of what occurred on the second day. The second reason why it's erroneous is Detective Ballard was asked whether, and I'm not quoting exactly here, but the words used with him were probable cause, which is a much more demanding standard than reasonable articulable suspicion. And the State's not arguing that there was probable cause as a result of either day independently or both days put together. But that's not what is required in order to make a vehicle stop. All that's required is reasonable articulable suspicion. And then the third thing is that based on this court's precedents, particularly Laughlin and Hall, the State respectfully suggests that the testimony of a detective based on his experience interpreting things that would appear to be, could be innocent events, provides reasonable articulable suspicion. And particularly, I would respectfully suggest, the first day's transactions, they're suspicious even if you're not a drug detective. The driving up the block, the signaling, the driving to the end of the block, the walking back, the getting in the car, the driving to the end of the block, the getting back out, the driving away. That's suspicious. When you have a detective who says, in effect, that's how drug transactions sometimes occur, I've seen it done before, which he said, that's a reasonable articulable suspicion to pull that car over. When you take what occurred on day one, because the State's position, not that the court has to decide it, is that that by itself was enough to have pulled the car over on day one, but then you take the events of day two, when you have a person known to be involved in the drug trade comes in, leans in the car, the detective's testimony, which is sometimes a little confusing, said that that was not an atypical length of time for a drug transaction.
Let me make sure I understand what you believe we should hold in order to do reached the correct determination here. Do we hold that what was said about the tinted windows is wholly irrelevant and was not the basis for the stop because there was sufficient, reasonable, articulable suspicion that a crime was being committed before anyone said anything about the tinted windows or saw the tinted windows? Or do you want us to say that the tinted windows are important because that's an objective basis for stopping the car because somehow a police officer can look at the windows and say 70% is against the law, but that's 69.8%. I can tell by looking at it. Therefore, I know it's not, it's okay or not okay. What's the correct holding here?
Your Honor, I believe that the court could go in either of those two directions. The state's preference would be to hold that there was a reasonable, articulable suspicion based on the drug evidence to stop the car.
And ignore the comment about stopping for tinted windows, which the trial judge inferred meant Ballard didn't believe he had a reasonable, articulable suspicion. That's why he told the other police officer, get him for the tinted windows, or words to that effect, right?
Why he told the officer to get him for the tinted windows, that's subject to speculation. You know, there's a lot of reasons why officers look for tinted windows or something else, including keeping what they're doing hidden from the suspects, you know, providing.
Well, what if he'd said getting for the left rear taillight being crushed?
Well,
or for failure to give a left turn signal when he turned onto Sherman Street.
And, Your Honor, that would be essentially the same as saying get him for the window tint.
Right, except, in my view, deciding whether or not windows are overly tinted or under-tinted consistent with the law is really a subjective decision, and whether somebody has a broken taillight or not is a very objective decision.
Your Honor, and
I'm judgment, I should say.
I'm not going to disagree with you. Some traffic violations are cut and dried. I think that's what the court is saying or suggesting. But essentially, what one might infer that the officers were doing was essentially providing more than one reason why the stop would be a valid stop.
Bottom line, then, the answer to my question is, you don't care which way we go on that. Your preference would be that we determine there was a reasonable, articulable suspicion before anything was said about the tenant, wouldn't
it? Yes, Your Honor.
But we could say on either basis it was a legitimate stop.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your point.
Yes.
Okay.
So Mr. Andrews will take a win any way he can. Mr. Andrews, let me get at this a slightly different way. I mean, we know that you're... position is that the trial judge erred in suppressing the evidence. The question is, what should the trial judge have done in expressing the rationale for doing that?
Well, because I believe that this court could reverse on either basis, I believe that the trial court could have decided on either basis, but clearly the primary one that was being argued by the parties had to do with the reasonable, articulable suspicion based on the drug.
All right. So what one way that the trial judge could have expressed the rationale that would justify going the other way, that is denying the motion, would be that from day one, the police had a reasonable and articulable suspicion that there was drug-related activity going on with that car.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so, even though I would just say, and I'm not suggesting the court has said otherwise, that by day two, you want to have the second event occur right before the stop, because probably the...
All right, well, by the second day, there certainly was a reasonable and articulable suspicion.
The only point I was trying to make is the first day's information by itself would have been stale, perhaps, by the second day, but the first day's information would have been sufficient to make a stop on the first day, but that didn't occur. The first day's information combined with the second day's information, combined with the anonymous tip that sort of fit in with it, provided plenty of suspicion to make the stop on the second day.
All right, then the question becomes, how should the trial judge have dealt, either factually or legally, with the instruction given by I guess it was the officer that was looking through the television camera or the television screen to stop on the basis of the tint of the windshield.
Your Honor, I don't think the trial judge had to do anything about that, because if there was a reasonable, articulable suspicion to make the stop based on the drug evidence, the subjective states of mind of what the surveillance officer or the officer making the stop, neither one is particularly relevant. The Supreme Court decides what the law is, what constitutes a reasonable, articulable suspicion, what set of facts would.
Okay, so you're saying that if after the fact the trial judge can conclude, based on the totality of circumstances, that there was a reasonable and articulable suspicion that of drug activity sufficient to justify the stop, it doesn't really matter what instructions were given by the police.
Yes, Your Honor, and particularly because the record suggests that Detective Ballard, the surveillance detective, thought that you needed probable cause to make a car stop, because that was the term that he used when he was asked, when he was talking about, I was going to the window tint because I didn't have probable cause.
Well, these opinions are not solely expositions of legal doctrine applied to particular facts. They're also tools that are designed to teach the police how they ought to conduct themselves. And so it is relevant, at least in that sense, how the instruction to stop for the tinted glass should have been handled.
I think I understand the court's point, but I'm...
Well, let me say it differently. Is it the message that, that the police might take home from the opinion, the hypothetical opinion that we've just discussed, is, well, it really doesn't matter what instruction you give. You can give any old instruction as long as the judge, after the fact, can find that you did have a legally valid reason to stop.
Well, and I know we don't want to encourage the police officers to misunderstand the law or not to be familiar with the law, but in fact, if, the law sometimes outfoxes lawyers, so while there is a value to having the police have as full and complete understanding of the law as they can, it shouldn't be the case, I would respectfully submit, that simply because they don't understand the law means that they should lose the evidence.
Well, I'm looking at the bench ruling here, and I'm trying to correlate it to what you said the officer testified regarding his belief that he didn't have probable cause. Because just before the judge rules, the judge said to the officer who stopped the car, you are basically told to find any traffic violation that would justify the stop. And he said, yes, that's correct. So they picked the tinted windows. Then the judge says, well, if you were told to find any traffic violation, I take that as a clear acknowledgement there was no reasonable, articulable suspicion and that additional probable cause was needed. And then the judge goes on to hold that there was no reasonable, articulable suspicion. I would have thought, if the confusion was that Detective Ballard thought he needed probable cause, the judge would have commented on that. But what the judge's holding was, not related to probable cause, the holding was, I don't think you had any reasonable, articulable suspicion.
No, Your Honor, a couple of things. One of which is, the judge, I think the testimony you're talking about was when she was asking Detective Ballard, who hadn't seen any of the video.
Right.
He was just the man on the street. So what he knows about what the evidence adds up to, he doesn't. What I was referring to in terms of probable cause occurs when the judge, when the court, sums up at pages A67 to A70, and Your Honor, clearly the judge does understand what the standard is, because page 70 she talks about there not being reasonable articulable suspicion, but that's also, I would suggest, where the error comes in, because if you look at page A68, what she quotes, because her oral ruling takes up about 3 pages of transcript, her oral ruling quotes Detective Ballard, the surveillance officer, saying, at that point, I tried to get other officers from my unit to attempt to stop both vehicles, because, of course, we're talking about day one, not day two, if they could find probable cause to do it. And that was a quote. That's at page A12 of the testimony. Then she said, the court says, and your testimony was that you wanted to attempt to stop them to see if they could find some probable cause for a stop. Answer, they would need something more than what I observed. And that's at page A25. So while the court, I'm not saying the court didn't understand what the standard is, but using, as she basically does, to say Detective Ballard didn't think he had enough, so I don't think he had enough, and that seems to be the essence of, I mean, that's a big part of the court's ruling, Detective Ballard's not using the right standard.
I think what you're, I understand what you're saying is that what the court should have held was whether or not Detective Ballard thought that he had either probable cause or a reasonable and articulable suspicion, you know, an independent objective scrutiny of the totality of the circumstances showed that they did have a reasonable and articulable suspicion, and that's what the trial judge should have done.
Yes,
Your
Honor.
Make that independent determination, and she erred by not doing that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I did just notice that, and I would.
May it please the Court, Chief Justice, members of the Court, good day. Tom Foley on behalf of Mr. Williams. Delaware trial courts routinely, almost daily, are asked to determine whether or not reasonable suspicion exists to justify a stop or detention. In this case, the trial court's finding of facts are actually consistent with the record, and the trial court applied the correct standard of law in determining that the Wilmington police lacked a reasonable basis to stop the vehicle in question on day two.
You said that the trial court got the facts right or something, and I thought one of the fairly significant problems we're dealing with here is that the trial court identified what the officer testified about regarding his belief as to whether there was a basis to stop on the first day, but the trial court said that was how he felt about things on the second day, when in fact by the time of the second day, the police officer felt that there was a basis to stop.
Her mistake was insignificant. Let me address that right now, Justice Brooker. What she testified to is the state is correct that at the end of the first day, when I was cross-examining Detective Ballard, he testified that my question to him was, so you're looking for probable cause to justify a traffic stop? And his response was, yes, they would need something more than what I observed, they being his fellow patrol officers. But on day two, he testified at transcript at A36, he directed that they pull him over for a window tint. Then Officer Hazard, who was only available on day two, he testified at A49, he said, well, we were going to follow him trying to find a violation on the vehicle, and I found a violation. Question by defense counsel. So your instructions were to try to find a traffic violation to justify the stop, correct? Answer, right. So even though she transposed the testimony of Ballard from day one to day two, her sentiments are consistent in that the court could easily have found that on both days the police were going to try to drum up a traffic violation to justify the stop. And that's consistent on both days. So even though she got the testimony wrong, I think it's insignificant in the grand scheme of things and doesn't affect her ruling. Her ruling being that there simply wasn't reasonable suspicion.
But under the Fourth Amendment, let's just focus on a Fourth Amendment analysis under Wren. Was there or wasn't there a reasonable articulable suspicion of a window tint violation on this record?
No. And I'll cite a case, State v. Williams, it's 934 Atlantic 2nd 38, which is the Maryland Court of Appeals addressed that. The officer didn't even know what the standards were when I asked him to justify a window tint violation. He didn't even know what the standard was. So for him,
whether he knows or not, objectively, is there a basis?
No, because all tinted windows are darker than untinted windows. And the Maryland court addressed that, and they rejected it under a Wren analysis. And the Maryland Court of Appeals said, we're okay with Wren here in Maryland, but for this window tint, it can't be an officer simply saying, it looked darker than usual, that that's not enough. Or I couldn't see, they have to be familiar with the standard to apply that. And so I think in this case, the state, even if this court were to adopt Wren, and we can talk about that if we need to, but that you need a good traffic violation to justify, and they didn't have it in this case. The officer didn't even know what the standard was, so I don't think we can make that leap that it was an okay routine traffic stop, such as something
says,
that's cut and dry.
Help me understand this. If he says, I don't know whether it's 69%, 75%, whatever it is, but I could not see who was inside the vehicle. Why isn't that enough?
Because with the window tints, and the rear windows have more discretionary sums, you can see through it. So that it depends on all windows. It still may not be enough.
Well, do you?
And
have
they address
to have,
that specifically in the Maryland case.
Do you have to have a window tint expert testify?
We have
or,
to,
or isn't it enough that the officer has reason to believe that the tint may be more than what the law allows?
I don't think the officer can have reason to believe that there's a problem if he doesn't know what the standard is, period.
Let me ask you this. We're being asked to determine that the trial judge erred in granting the motion to suppress. For us to decide that issue, we need to have a clear idea of what the trial judge actually did in analyzing the case. My question is, did the trial judge make an independent determination that there was no reasonable and articulable suspicion to justify the stop?
She certainly did.
Independent of the testimony that Justice Holland read a few minutes ago.
She did it.
Or did she rely exclusively on that testimony in arriving at her determination that there was no reasonable and articulable suspicion?
No, she applied a totality of circumstances test, and it bears out on A70 of the transcript, where she says, and I'll quote, "And it turns out that indeed his instinct," referring to Ballard, "and intuition were good, they were accurate, but that's not sufficient. There needs to be a reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle. Had there been an observation of any kind of hand-to-hand transaction, had there not been other reasons to believe that there was simply a conversation that took place when a known drug dealer, being Hammond, leaned to the car, there might have been reasonable suspicion. But here I find that the detective instincts, which again were accurate, is not sufficient."
Okay.
And that's consistent with two cases out of this court.
Well, before you get to the cases, is it your position then that once having made an independent totality of circumstances determination the reference to the officer not even believing that there was a reasonable and articulable suspicion, it was merely corroboration of what she had already determined?
Correct. I think she was simply noting that, but I would
it's
agree.
Sort of a by the way type of observation.
Right. And I would frankly agree with my counterpart that the fact that an officer himself may not believe he has enough to justify a stop,
it's irrelevant,
isn't binding on the court. It's an objective standard. But it's telling. And facts do matter. But
we could disregard it as a legal matter.
Yes.
In which case, the real question and where the two sides part is on the issue of whether the court made a proper objective determination that there was no reasonable articulable suspicion.
Exactly. But I think she applied the right standard of law, and the facts were not, there was not a clearly erroneous application of the facts.
But
and
wasn't she addressing in her comment a reasonable articulable suspicion of illegal drug activity as opposed to the window tint? Did she address the window tint violation or not?
She did not. She did not specifically make a factual finding of whether or not there was a basis to stop the car for window tint.
And was there an argument made that either one of those two facts would be enough? And in other words, either the activity that could be viewed as drug activity or the fact that the window tint was dark, that either one of those would form a basis for a reasonable articulable suspicion?
The state made those alternative arguments.
So in other words, the court heard the argument and then decided it on only one ground.
She did. And she also heard my argument that he didn't know what the standard was, so she could dismiss it. But the focus of her opinion was that there wasn't reasonable suspicion to justify the stop. She never said in the alternative, I find that there was also not a basis to stop the car for window tint. She never factually said that.
Well, isn't that important? I mean, because either one of those would be sufficient, right? If either one of those bases were sound.
It was clearly in front of her, and the fact that she didn't dismiss it tells me that she didn't think there was any basis to justify it based on the window tint, that she disregarded that as being a lawful basis to do a traffic stop. It was clear to her that that was drummed up.
If I understand this window tint business, there's a provision of Title 21 or somewhere in the Delaware Code that says, in effect, thou shalt not have windows tinted to a certain percentage darker than normal or something like that.
It actually cites the CFR. There's no
the
numbers.
Federal CFR. This is a federal standard.
Right.
As unfortunately there is for virtually everything we do anymore, but that's another day. Was there any evidence that these windows, in fact, were improperly tinted?
No.
And can you base reasonable articulable suspicion on, I thought maybe somebody didn't turn on their turn signal, or I thought maybe that their taillight was out, or I thought maybe that they were speeding, but I'm not really sure?
No.
Has that ever been a reasonable articulable suspicion for stopping somebody?
I think the only sort of one in the middle might be where you have a speeding case and the officer doesn't have radar, but he's saying, from where I'm sitting in my position, this car relative to everybody else was flying at a lot faster clip, and so I had a reasonable suspicion that he was traveling at an unreasonable speed. I think.
But was there any factual basis in the record for the trial judge to even bother to rule on whether these windows violated the statute based on the CFR because they were tinted more than we allow them to be on the roadway?
No.
Well, didn't the officer testify he had observed a window tint violation? I mean, didn't he actually use that phrase?
Ballard testified, and he's looking through a camera, so how he could know, God knows. But he says, pull him over for window tint. And then the officer, the patrol officer says, I was told to pull him over for window tint, so I did. Do you know what the standard is? No. Now, did he say something about, beyond that, I can't remember, frankly.
So, as I understand your argument, once the officer said, I don't even know what the standard is for window tint, you read the judge as saying, well, let's just go to the real issue in this case. You wanted to stop the guy for drugs. You were looking for a violation, a traffic violation. You thought you had it with a window tint. Now he's pulled over by an officer who doesn't even know what the window tint standard is. So let's talk about the real issue. Was there a reasonable, articulable suspicion of drug activity? And the judge said, I hold there was not.
Exactly right, Your Honor. And what she really talked about, and this is what I want to talk about when I first came up here, is that in this case, the state's asking this court to take what is really a detective's hunch or instinct, whatever you want to call it, and repackage that under the totality of the circumstances as viewed through the eyes of a trained officer. He's a vice cop, or he's a drug guy. He just knows better than the rest of us. And that's not the standard. The standard is that there is deference that's paid to an officer's experience, most certainly. But Reed v. George and Sokolow, U.S. Supreme Court, what they said is that it's not enough if it's based on an isolated or minimal instances of criminal activity versus a collection of several innocent facts, which is in Sokolow, where he had like six different factors to show the guy was a drug courier. This court addressed that same issue twice, Once in Riley v. State, which I did not cite in my brief, that's a 2006 case, 892 Atlantic 2nd at 370, the Newark police were down trying to bust college kids buying liquor underage. And they're set up in a parking lot, and they see one car coming in with two girls who look underage. A second car shows up. A guy gets out of the car. He gets in the back seat. He's conversing. The girls are looking around, and the cops converge because they think there's either a drug deal or maybe that the girls are offering to, you know, here's some money to buy me liquor. And this court rejected it, saying it was simply a hunch, not enough. Again, in Harris v. State, it was Wilmington Police train station case. Probably the most experienced train station interdiction plainclothes detective ever is down there, and he says he sees a guy get off the train. Trains always have drug couriers. The guy looks hinky. He's got a backpack. He looks over his shoulder three times, goes to a payphone. This court said not enough, again saying hunch or instinct isn't there. The facts of this case, the tip was very, very generic, about this block. There was nothing about the car in question, nothing. Ballard spends 2 days, 3 hours apiece, and they had video, which they didn't present to the court, which was amazing, and that should be telling of itself. They didn't present the actual video that they had in the courtroom for the trial court to see. But in 3 hours on each day, he sees nothing on the block. He sees nothing of a pattern of people that are, you know, have pedestrians coming by, and there's a bunch of hand-to-hand transactions. So it completely dispels the tip. And he says he sees a bunch of innocent activity, FedEx trucks, people just going about their business. This is broad daylight. On day one, the first car pulls over at the end of the block, and he testifies, and I think everyone knows from being in Wilmington, that if you have cars parked on both sides, you're going to block traffic. So the guy pulls to the end of the block, which is not unusual. He's neatly dressed. He's not acting stealthily. There's no currency seen exchange. There's no one seen holding anything or clutching anything. Nothing stealthful. And Ballard, you know, to his credit, acknowledges it could have been, you know, two family members or friends or lovers exchanging a key, a piece of mail, a recipe, money from grandma, a birthday card. Who knows? We don't even know if there was a transaction, okay? He runs a tag number of the marquee. Nothing comes back to suggest it's criminal. There's no interaction between that car and anyone else in the block. The next day, he sees a known drug dealer who's out there, but he doesn't see the drug dealer doing anything suspicious. He simply sees him walk to the car, leans in for about a minute, and he acknowledges on cross-examination that it was a lot longer conversation than what would take place for a drug deal. Again, no currency, no hand-to-hands, no one clutching anything, no one hiding anything under a porch or a stoop or, you know, whatever you normally see with drug activity. And Ballard simply says, pull him over for tinted windows. That's simply not enough, because what we're doing then is we're saying that if an officer is a vice cop or a drug detective, that every time there's an encounter between two citizens in Delaware, he can say, aha, drug deal. Well, based on what? I just know. We can't have that. Otherwise, people can never interact. And we can't have, okay, it's the city of Wilmington, and we'll have some special exception versus what may go on in Hoquess and Greenville. People are able to interact.
What about if that car had a broken taillight?
Well, then we're into REM. And that's a good question. And this court has never, in my mind, flushed that out. And I think that's a very, very, I understand what the U.S. Supreme Court's done, but I think it's a very, very toxic policy to allow pretextual stops. It invites lazy and shady police work. It affects the integrity of law enforcement as viewed by the citizens, because you're going to have a unbalanced application of the motor vehicle laws. And what's going to happen is there's going to be it affects race and a lot of things that ought not come in play, but also just certain class of people are going to get stopped a lot more than other people in Delaware. And so you're going to have traffic laws that are not uniformly applied if you just allow pretextual stops to happen. Very, very toxic, and I think the sentiments by Judge Young and Heath are telling. But I think
you do mean allow, if we allow pretextual stops to happen.
Yes.
Not disallow pretextual stops.
If if we allow them. I think it's very, very toxic. It's bad policy. This court has also is often provided more protection than offered by the federal standard. But I just think that it's a very, very dangerous and toxic policy to allow police officers to make pretextual stops, because they push the envelope as it is already. And this court gives them the green light. They will shake down people, like, for everything. Judge Wren commented, there's a study that 93% of the motorists commit a traffic violation between Delaware and Baltimore every day on 95. It takes nothing to generate a traffic violation, and it invites very shady things. Police officer says, failure to use a turn signal coming out of Brookmont Farms. Is he going to pull someone for failure to use a turn signal coming out of Wilmington Country Club? I doubt it. And that's the difference you're going to have. And you're going to have a completely disparate treatment of Delaware motorists.
Well, if there's a remedy for selective enforcement under equal protection, isn't there, independent of whether Wren is accepted or not?
Very, 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 very hard to prove. And it would be very, very taxing in the trial courts to have a that kind of hearing, a profiling hearing on every single Fourth Amendment case where there's a traffic stop. Why'd you pull them over? And we see this with Safe Streets and the Governor's Task Force every day. Five cars pulling someone over for failing to use a turn signal.
Well, equal protection only applies to protected classes anyway. So if you're selectively enforced while you're not a member of a protected class, you're going to get the raw end of the stick under the theory that you've just espoused.
But it's more than that. It's younger people. People that are not really protected classes, but younger people, people from lower incomes, are going to be more subject to pretextual stops than other Delaware motorists. And I just think that's a very, very toxic, and it destroys the integrity of law enforcement in the state. And I think Delaware should take a higher road and not allow pretextual stops. And you know one when you see one, and this was one.
Did you have anything further?
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
A couple things. Mr. Foley said that the Superior Court didn't address the window tint. I think the Superior Court did. It was very brief. At the bottom of page A69, what the court said was, what I did not hear any testimony about from either witness, meaning the detectives, was that they would have stopped the vehicle for the window tint regardless of whether or not there was a suspicion of a drug transaction. That seems to be a reference to pretext, and that she thought it was a pretext, and that basically the detectives would have had to say we would have stopped that vehicle anyway. So,
is it equally possible to interpret her as saying, because there was no genuine evidence that the window was illegally tinted, that they would have stopped the car anyway, and it didn't really matter whether there was an actual violation of an improperly tinted window at all?
Your Honor, in isolation, I think that would be a possible reading, but I think the argument that was made by the parties suggested that the question of whether or not there was enough evidence of window tint wasn't argued. What was addressed was whether it was a pretext or not.
I thought there was testimony that I don't know the standard. All I know is I couldn't see somebody inside.
Your Honor, that's
isn't that the closest to meeting the CFR?
It is, Your Honor. The exact testimony, which I think is at page A43 or the appendix 43, I believe, was Officer Hazard saying the windows, quote, had tint on them. I wasn't able to make out exactly who was driving the vehicle, unquote. I think the court did rule on the window tint. It's possible that there could be more than one. It was very brief. But the question had been raised, had she addressed it at all? And I thought I should bring up that I think she
did. Does the record reflect whether the defendant was charged with the window tint violation?
Your Honor, I believe that, and I'm trying to think, you know, I looked at the indictment, and there was a traffic. I believe he was, Your Honor, but I believe he was, but I wouldn't actually suggest that that's particularly probative one way or the other. If I'm right, And if I'm wrong, I will also suggest it's not particularly probative, but I think the last count of the indictment was a window tint violation.
So I understand your position. Is it your position that the trial judge actually found a window tint violation?
No, Your Honor, I'm not really saying that. I'm just saying there was a question, had she ruled on it at all? And she said something about it, and I just wanted to bring that out. I think my best interpretation of the one sentence she said about it was that, and this is not her exact words, but because it was clearly a pretext within the meaning of pretext stops, and there is this case Heath that a lot of the Superior Court judges cite.
What does satisfy a reasonable articulable suspicion of a window tint violation?
Well, Your Honor, the easier case would be one where the person said, the officer testifying said, I couldn't see through the windows. I don't think it's reasonable or possible to assume that even if they know the standard, that officers are going to be saying, yes, that was a 75% or that was a 65%. And so this case Trower, which I cited earlier, said something along the lines of not being able to see inside the car, and particularly, I think, perhaps to see the driver. Here, the testimony is not perhaps as strong as the state would like to have seen it, perhaps the court would like to have seen it, because it's somewhat, to me at least, it's somewhat ambiguous. I could not make out exactly. If the detective had said, well, that's what the testimony is. I think it's pretty close at best for the state. But it is our view that that's a reasonable, articulable suspicion if you have trouble seeing through the tint to the occupants inside. Unless there are any other questions, I see my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.